extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Kaylin Kyle, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Match Day 8 in the books. We are here to tell you all about it, and we're all experts. We're armchair analysts, you might say. If you're looking around, if these chairs feel familiar to you, it's because we are all sitting above you, looking down upon you, sharing our expertise with you. It's a privilege, Doyle, to sit in a chair that you have turned into a throne, so to speak.
Yeah, it turned into a meme the other night. Do you want the story? Is that what
yes.
you're trying
sure,
to
yeah,
team
yeah.
me up
no,
for?
No, no, Dave Clark hit us up and said, what are we going to talk about in Extra yeah. Time today? Dave said, tall chairs.
Yeah.
Ben said, we need the inside information on Doyle's chair. So this has become a thing.
From MLS 360, Kaylin finally invited me on, so
no,
I showed up.
Can I make one thing clear? Mm-hmm. I have been advocating for this for weeks. And also, when they told me what you were coming in with, I was like, you guys, this is crazy. This is cringe. We're not doing this. They're like, no, it's funny. And I was like, okay.
Is yeah. this like, you know, you have dinner plans, and then you get to dinner, and you're like, oh, did somebody invite Doyle? Like, yeah. like oh, yeah, all good. Oh, hey, so, next time.
Honestly, so they said, all right, you know, you have this segment. We're going to put you on at the 11:30 hour. You'll be following Alexi, which is always, you know, raises the bar in a certain
shot
way.
Chaser, yeah. so to speak.
and they're like, you're going to carry the chair on and, you know, sit down next to them. You'll see exactly where to put it. And then you'll have the conversation. And I was like you carry like a chair, like a bar stool, because you guys have a million sets, right? You go through like five different looks throughout the night. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, they have a bar stool set. Like, they'll...
Well, I'll be on bar stools.
Yeah.
What you
so it's
yeah.
like, okay, I guess that'll be it. It's not what I would have thought for
the assumption being
entries.
Doyle will slide off a bar stool. Doesn't well, seem to be
that
your style.
Happened. That has happened a few times.
The bar chair had me thinking it was like a comedic set. You know, they like walk out with the bar stool, set their drink on top of it, use it as a prop every now and then.
What's what the deal imagining. With soccer?
Right. Yeah. So when I, you know, you get your makeup on and they clip you with all the gear so that you can hear the producer and yell at Anders, and Anders can yell back at you and stuff like that. And they bring me out to, you know, just off stage, and they have the chair there, and I'm looking out there, and you guys are in freaking couches, and I'm like, this is going to be ridiculous. This is going to be absolutely ridiculous. But yeah,
I have two favorite parts of this. So he rolls out with the chair. You're looking $1 million, by the way. You smashed your first video, and then it was like something took over your body and you completely took control of the room. We didn't need hosts. He was like, not yelling, but he was like, roll the tape, Jeff, to our producer. I'm dying laughing. It was like you became a different human being, and I loved it.
So
loved it.
Would you, everyone wants to know, so I'm just going to ask the question out loud. How much money do you get from the chair lobby per year? Because armchair analyst
is it a chair? Is more of a stool. So
well,
we're sort
it doesn't
of...
matter, though. Has anyone done more for chairs in the soccer space
for
in
big
America
chair
than you?
More
yeah,
for,
exactly.
for big chair. Yeah, no, it's you know what?
Because I think small ottoman is asking
I don't
the question.
Have to, I don't have to divulge that okay. information.
I just smell a sponsorship coming through.
See, I would hope.
I would
I was
going to
say,
well.
That should have been here for a long time ago. I mean, you've been the armchair analyst for more than a decade. I mean,
yeah.
your house should just be rotating armchairs of different
I
different
would,
materials
I
and
would
varieties.
Think, but I guess I'm not big enough.
You know,
but now that I've made my 360, now that I've made my 360 debut, maybe the sponsorship bucks will start rolling in.
Usually I'm tallest on set, and I was literally looking up at Doyle on the weekend.
I was like lecturing a class of fourth graders.
Exactly.
It was ridiculous.
You should get a dais.
I want you to know, everybody will appreciate this. Just before I'm heading out there, Chris Yep, who's the producer of the pregame show and the yeah. wrap up that Weeby's on, he whispers to me, "How's it feel to know that you're making your 360 debut before Weeby is?" I'm like, okay.
How did it feel? How did it feel though? Making your 360 debut.
You know,
not before these guys. These guys are amazing, but how did it feel?
I actually said this to Weeby after after the show when I came back down to the green
room.
I'm
better than you. And that's,
no. Yeah, I said I'm better than you. Yeah. No, it's weird in that studio because that studio is gigantic.
Yeah.
Like, this is Weeby's basement, right? Like, it's a nice studio. It's, like, kind of intimate. It's really good for a podcast. The 360 studio is freaking huge. So it's a completely different vibe out there. So I walked out there, I had nerves, and I was like, I'm going to take care of this by not letting anybody else talk for 5 minutes. Just going to steamroll.
Roll
over
the tape,
everybody.
Jeff.
Yeah, roll the tape, Jeff.
Well, take, I just want to say that you absolutely smashed it.
Of course I did. You know,
a different atmosphere up there on your chair than the one below, but it was wonderful to see Doyle on 360, and I thought you brought the heat as well. Got us all ready for El Tráfico, which we'll, of course, be discussing in just a second, along with the Portland Timbers absolutely smacking the Seattle Sounders. Anders, it is a rivalry. In case you've forgotten,
I think it's pronounced Flounders.
Yeah, by the way, I'm looking at the text chat and we have 14 new messages.
Because we can't hear anything.
After the whole story about how Doyle got on 360 before, I was like, nothing in the ears. No, it's all gone.
Anders goes, can you hear? I go, well, we're all in a room together. Yeah, so I can hear. And this guy needs his, everything needs to be perfect.
We can confirm, Anders, that I can hear you now. Okay. We can. This is the inside baseball that everybody's asked for. Like, give us 10 minutes on chairs and audio within the studio setting. We'll talk about how many points of font City is, right? A city. Because they're back
up to like 25, man.
Oh, that's low. That's low. I gave them some bonus points on this one. And, of course, we'll go into the Revs crew and everything else in match day 8. We start the same way we always do. That's the best thing you saw in match day 8. Let's see. Doyle, get us started.
Celtics first half. Celtics first half. They were great.
Yeah, of course.
That's how you handle a Trae Young team in the playoffs. You go right at him. You make him defend.
That was when we started Elfrid Payton. Okay. That was not even version 1.0 of this Knicks.
Okay.
Team. Now we're version 1. Didn't you tell me none of it would work in the playoffs for the Knicks?
It's not going to.
Oh, they just won game one on the road.
By the way, what version of the Knicks at? Because just as, you know, as MLS fans, we're at 1.0,
yeah, 2.0. That's true.
We're very familiar with the additions.
I think you could say 2.0. Jalen Brunson coming in takes you into another era.
They finally signed a DP.
Yeah, exactly. But you had Randall. The draft picks were already on the team. So you could say we're at 2.0.
The best thing I saw this weekend were the late goals. It felt like the intensity got ratcheted up a bit in MLS this weekend. And it felt like teams are being cleaner with the ball. So especially over the final 20 minutes as the legs go a little bit, we're seeing more productive sequences with the ball, getting more runners into the box with good timing. I think that it's kind of a leading indicator of teams sort of rounding into shape. We've seen that the past two weekends now, but it was especially apparent this weekend. That was the best thing I saw.
I think it was 7 goals, if I remember right, after the 88th minute, after the 88th minute. So, ton of drama.
Spectacular saves, too. I think Steve Clark had one that was unbelievable.
It also helps when everyone plays like 10 minutes of stoppage time.
Yeah.
Fair point.
Don't ruin it for the rest.
A little bit more volume.
Oh, Bruce.
That doesn't make it less
Bruce,
fun.
Calm down, Bruce. All right, calm down. It's
Bruce's
okay.
Bruce's quote, if you're going to use that phony baloney.
I love that.
Clear.
So good. We will do the math. I did the math on Crew Revs, so we'll talk about that in a second. I'm going to stick with the late goals here. Bernard Kabungo scores in his second appearance for FC Dallas late on to get them a win.
That was the best of them against just RSL. His story.
It just, the story is unbelievable. He was born in a refugee camp in Tanzania. I think he was 14 or early teens. He moves to Abilene, Texas, and, you know, obviously loves soccer, loves the game, is playing for his high school. His brother signed him up, and this is my understanding of the story. Like, I may be getting some small details wrong here.
His brother signed him up for an open tryout for North Texas.
He makes the team, then thrives with North Texas, signs a contract with Dallas. He's played 38 total minutes in his entire MLS career. He scored a ton of goals for North Texas, but scores the game winner, and you could just see the joy on the, well, first of all, you're winning.
Yeah.
But you could see the personal joy for Dallas and who it was, what the occasion was, and what it meant to him, and to do it at home. It was just it was one of those stories where, like, you start to read the story, then you see the moment, and you sort of get this big picture feeling of, like, what that must mean for the young man, for his family, for the club, for all these people that have been invested in his career.
Do you think his brother's taking his 10%?
I hope so.
I would be. I'd be like, you know what, babes? I'm taking 20.
At least on the credit angle. Like, hey, don't ever forget who signed you up for that tryout.
By the way, it wasn't a fluke goal. It was really good, clever movement in the box, reading the movement of his teammates and knowing where that pocket would be. Like, that was a goal scorer's goal.
And he's the guy that they've, like, sort of been developing and waiting.
How old is he? He's 18.
21, actually.
Oh, okay. He's a couple of years old. Yeah. Okay.
Because he didn't come. And I think he just got his citizenship. Last year, which was really cool because the whole team celebrated him and all that stuff. So, yeah, he's been a special story.
Congrats, Renard. That was an amazing moment for you and for us watching at home. Kaylin, your moment of match day 8.
I feel like we should have ended with you, but I'm going with my Canadian Richie Larea. Also a really cool story, nothing like that, but just his kind of journey through football started in Orlando, was in and out of the first team, then dropped to Orlando City B team, didn't really get minutes with the first team, then traded to Toronto. Greg Vanney basically gave him this confidence to be probably one of the best best right backs in Major League Soccer. Got transferred overseas, then had come back because wasn't getting playing minutes there. And then he goes and scores a screamer. And I think not only the goals that he's scoring with Toronto, it's kind of what he adds. And then to have someone like a Bernadeschi that has played at the top level to give credit where credit's due to someone like him saying, you know what, I've never played with such a selfless player that does the overlaps, does the underlaps. I know that he's always going to be running for me. That's exactly what he did in the goal. Started the play, did the overlap, then cut inside. And then it was like right foot, left foot, and the quick release and the power in which he got it off from. Well done, Richie. Well done.
I love the technique where he understands where the defender is, and so he's going to kind of over-index across his body so he can get it on the right foot to create that shooting angle and then the space, and then just uncorks. Which is a perfect shot.
And I like good people that do well as well. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Guy. Like, he's just a genuine human being. I text him after the game, and I was like, what a galazo. And he was like, cheers, Kay. Like, hope you're doing well. Like, it was just, he's just such a good human. Like,
his 100th appearance for Toronto as well. So it had some nice storylines.
Well, we spent all last week talking about youth development and, like, where it's going. Mm-hmm. And these are two stories in the opposite direction, where it was, like, players who didn't come through MLS academies.
Yep.
I think part of the story with Richie, and he's a good person, so I think he would be this way ever, though, is I think the struggle of like finding playing time and then you come to Toronto and it's comfortable and it was his dream, but it wasn't straightforward. Mm-hmm. It's at a different position. It feels like all of that adds to the player he became of being selfless and just being a part of a team. Yeah. And that doesn't always happen when you're 17 and you're a wonder kid and then everything works for you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of always going to be a story in Major League Soccer. And Richie's like, I mean, he went to a World Cup.
Yeah. But the hope is that now there's the infrastructure and there's
where he gets converted at 15 and becomes a great right
identified
back.
It at 10 and you know brought up through the infrastructure and converted.
But there always needs to be the infrastructure as a catch-all for the guys that do get missed.
Absolutely.
Because that the two countries are too big.
Yeah, agreed. And like
the Duncan McGuire's like, of the world,
college soccer is obviously. I mean, they had Tim Ream on, you know, on the show this week. Tim Ream went to school for 4 years. Matt Turner went to college for 4 years. So college is an asset.
And in Connecticut, so it's a good school.
Right. College is an asset because it can catch those guys who fall through the cracks. But the hope is that as the academy system builds up, as MLS Next builds up, more Richie Larea's and Matt Turner's and Tim Ream's will be identified at a younger age and put into the pro pipeline at a younger age so that they don't go to college for a year.
And Next Pro, because college isn't right for everyone, right? So you get the Kamungas of the world who go straight into Next Pro, and that gets them into an MLS team. I mean, look at Columbus this weekend, right? All the guys coming off the bench either went to college and played Crew 2, or they just went straight into Crew 2, like Jason Russell Ray.
We touched on it, I think it was last week, just how important it is, because those young players training and eating and stretching in and around first-team players, it just sets you up for success in what it takes to be a pro, where you didn't really have that in America before. It was like, okay, yeah, you were a good college player. You're the best college player. Now here's transition on your own. And they were like, wait, why aren't I not starting in the starting 11 and the team's built around me? So, yeah.
Sasha was actually talking about that on the show a little bit, how he came. He had been a number 10 his entire life.
Man, every shell team had, shaping the team around
right. And like, he gets drafted by Chivas USA, plays for Bob, and Bob's like, you're not going to play unless you defend. Like, we don't even use number 10. You have to figure out how to play on both sides of the ball. And like, you're auditioning for a job for highly skilled college players. You're coming into the league. It's like what happened to Richie Larea.
Yeah.
You're coming into the league auditioning for a job that you have never done before.
Yep.
So, you know, part of the growth in MLS is teams understanding that as well and doing a better job of molding these kids. But really, it's coming at an earlier age. It's coming through the academy.
When Sasha came in, Jesse was still playing, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they played together.
They played together, yeah.
Squad. Mm-hmm. That Chivas team was fun.
That was.
Yeah, Ante Razov still playing. Yep. That was a squad.
Bob
Bradley is such a good coach. He made Chivas USA relevant.
And the Preki days, too. The Preki days picked up on it. I mean, that legit MLS
Remember when
team.
We did Where is Preki? We thought he was going to coach. Was it Leicester
City? Yeah. No, I
he
forgot.
He was going to leave Sacramento Republic
for
Leicester.
The whole Where is Preki saga. Yeah. Oh, man.
Huh. Can I also just say apologies to everyone tuning in? Because I literally wore the worst suit for a podcast today. It looks like I'm like a four-year-old going
Did
to play
Tom
a puddle.
Tom Bogert text you and say, hey, I don't know if you know this, but actually, if you could just wear a swishy New Jersey tracksuit.
You guys,
like head to toe in swish, by the way.
You guys have your daily cannoli meeting.
Right. You know what? To be fair, it was like a drizzle in New Jersey this morning, so I went with the safe option, okay?
How's the
also,
waste
just
management
trying to get a sponsorship from Adidas, so come on. Yeah. What did you just say?
I said, how's the waste management in New Jersey? My wife loves it, by the way. She loves it. But twice a week, trash pickup. It's incredible.
I know, it's crazy.
Missouri, get your act together. Kansas City, Missouri, that is. All right, Dave, give me your best thing you saw on match day 8.
Speaking of Missouri.
Hey-o!
St. Louis fans gutting it out through the weather. I don't really know any of this experience.
Yeah, not really gutting it out.
Why not?
Tornado warning, pretty normal for this time of year. Oh,
did you not see
area?
The? But did you not see two, the sky? Come on.
Again,
I didn't know the East Coast in Canada was so soft.
Oh, wow.
It's spring. This is what happens. There's tornado warnings. And then you look at the radar and you're like, it's not going to hit us. We're going to be good.
Unless you
hear the rumble, unless it sounds like a train is running down your house.
The siren went
off.
You
do not. Yeah, again.
The pitcher's
sirens
was like
all
coming
the time
down.
In that part of the world.
No, I will say, sorry, I know this is your thing to watch. Playing in Orlando, if we had a 30-minute weather delay with like light rain, there would be maybe 10% of the fans left. Same with the men's game. And I'm not taking anything away from Orlando fans because I know they're diehards, but the only fans that would stay in that stadium were the diehards and everyone else would go home. That stadium was lit.
Packed.
It was like they went out. I don't know where they got their beer from, where they were drinking their cervezas and the wine, but it was lit. It was loud. It was amazing.
Let me just tell you, having visited that stadium, they have a number of stations set up where it's like the what you walk in and you just like grab something and it's automated.
Yeah.
So nice. It probably had it pretty easy on the
quick
consumption
flow.
Side.
Also, did you see I owe you an Italian lunch because I placed the friendly wager over the LA Galaxy, which was a mistake, but that is the nature of my wagering always. And I like tweeted something that I would be bringing food. There's a picture or a GIF that came out from this game. Some guy standing behind one of the corner kick takers, like 12 pizza boxes stacked up, just waiting.
And the story behind that is he's a James Beard winning restaurateur. Who has?
But is it his pizza? No,
I don't know.
He's
maybe.
Just at the game,
is
right?
That real? Are you mean?
How did
I'm
he get
not
it in?
That
no,
it's actually true.
I think the stadium.
In case
pizza.
You don't know, me and the St. Louis people, despite the rivalry between Kansas City and St. Louis, we're close. We're tight.
Which one are you from?
Neither.
Oh, okay.
Can I just make one request? I would like you to be suited and booted for our Italian dinner.
Oh, you want me?
Yeah.
This sounds like a
fat shoe.
This is a team outing right here.
I'm not paying for you.
Sure, of course not. I want to come suited and booted.
Are we going to Arthur Avenue up in the Bronx? It's the best little Italy in America.
I'm in.
Because Montreal has the best little Italy in North America.
I've never had Italian in New York.
Oh.
Ever.
Wait, really?
Never. Only,
actually,
only
we
Italian
should probably
in Jersey.
Go to Jersey. Yeah.
Good thing there's no Italian in Jersey.
We should go to Jersey City or Hoboken. They're real. They're
you
for
pick,
real.
You pick, I'll show up. Tell me the time and date I'm there.
Okay. How was Montreal, by the way?
Oh, amazing city. Like, amazing city. Every time I go, I'm like, maybe I remember it, you know, glowingly. Great city. MLS team right now?
Not so great.
Yeah.
The food there is amazing.
Montreal, DC United on Saturday night? Could be rough, but... The city, amazing. The people, amazing. The weather was great. Every time I go, the weather is great. My assumption is it's always nice out in Montreal. Don't tell me otherwise, because I'm assuming that's correct.
That's the beauty of traveling and choosing your time of year.
I was
Montreal.
There in October and April, and it was perfect,
perfect.
Both
really?
Times.
It's like that 12 years
ago. Why would everybody live here,
right? Yeah. I wish I could. If anyone in Montreal is looking to hire an American who doesn't speak French, let me know.
Anything else we want to fire off? Random thoughts, feelings, memes before we get into the meat of this show, starting with El Trafico.
Yeah. Okay. No, I don't. I was going to say the 2-goal lead. I was fighting tooth and nails, and I want to hear from all of our listeners. Is a 2-goal lead hard to defend against? Yes or no?
Against, you mean to hold?
Oh, to hold, excuse me, yes.
You're asking if is it the most dangerous lead in sports? I don't know.
Doyle told me, I mean, the percentage is all,
it's not,
don't.
It's not, Kaylin.
It's not. All right, yeah. Anyways.
There's a lot of those cliches that don't work out.
You know what?
But all coaches tell you that when you grow 100%. Up. So I'm like, are coaches crazy? But even as a player,
yes,
you feel.
Coaches are. Yes,
but as a player, you feel like, oh, shoot, yeah, this is hard to hold on to. Don't look at me like
that. You know what's another one that has no statistical backing? The closer you are on a free kick to the goal, the higher chance you will score. There is no, it's too close. There's no statistical backing for that.
See,
you can't get it up and over the wall.
I want to see the data from you.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. But
I do enjoy this segment of Extra Time.
Devin,
we're
now
calling Soccer Mythbusters. It's enjoyable.
So to all my national team coaches, club coaches that ever told me that, you were wrong.
Send your soccer myths or the conventional wisdom.
Are we saying Herdman out? Is that what's happening?
Herdman in. But no, I don't think he's ever said that. No, I think he has
he
actually.
Must have
yeah,
said
definitely.
That.
We're about a minute and a half.
But he
past
did it with an axe and a sword in his hand.
Yeah.
Which was that a 2-0 lead is dangerous, but wasn't for LAFC. So on to El Tráfico we go. Dignity Health Sports Park, the site of this most recent El Tráfico. LAFC had never won there. That has, of course, changed now. It was bathed in black and gold. Some of the imagery from this rivalry match was just incredible, of the LAFC fans kind of taking over. Now, there is obvious context to that one. There was a boycott in place for the Galaxy fans, who are frustrated with their front office and the way things are going on the field, among other things. Some other news from this game. Carlos Vela is the one that gave LAFC the 2-0 lead. He is now the all-time leading scorer in El Tráfico. It's incredible to me that Zlatan had still held this. That Zlatan, I believe, had 9 goals and was still the all-time leading scorer.
Because he had them all in one game, I think.
Well, that's how much he just sort of lorded over this thing for so long. We're not going to spend as much time on LAFC.
It was a 3-1 lead. They never went up 2-0. Boyd equalized 1-1.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
It was a two-goal
lead.
Wow. Yeah.
They went up 1-0, 1-1, 2-1.
I was at a dive bar
2-1,
with Kaylin Carr, just trying to get my dive bar bona fides up, post the pregame show. So if I was a little bit confused.
Oh, you don't have to do anything post-game?
I didn't have to. No.
Maybe had a couple beers in him when he was doing instant replay. Bear that in mind this week.
We thought the game ended at 4:55 p.m. Eastern.
Once Carlos Vela scored, I was like, this thing's over. It's 2-0 right now. Anyway, so that was a tough moment. Go back and correct me on that one. Anyway, Matt Williams says, can LAFC have the first undefeated season in MLS history? So that gives you a hint of
good Lord.
How LAFC are feeling after this one. Kicking Cards says LAFC depth being overrated must be discussed. Of course, Michele Giannone, our very good friend / partner in soccer, honorary status on that one. Went on a rant on Twitter about that. I just want to remind Michele that we ranted about that last week. Dave did.
Yeah, but now my reasonable take is being connected to Michele's absurd version of his take. So now I'm in a bad spot.
What LAFC takes do we have from this match? Anything big, anything specific? Because I think a lot of this really just goes back to the Galaxy, because they are more of the...
I think the takeaway so far this year with LAFC is they have match winners.
Yep.
Dennis Bouanga, the biggest one of them, but they have more than one. And I think they've played solid. I don't think they've been incredible. And in almost every game, there's been a special moment from one of those players. As Greg Vanney said, you cannot beat yourself against this team because they will wait for it. Yeah. I just thought it was another example of that.
And I think my biggest takeaway is Carlos Vela publicly came out and said, I haven't been good enough in 2023. And then you just saw the moment when he scored that first goal. He was like, this is my city, baby. I'm here. And I finally showed up. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. And then obviously getting the first win on Galaxy soil.
What did you think of the first goal, Doyle, that Carlos Vela scores?
It was how LAFC were playing, right? They were playing for turnovers. They were playing to, as soon as the Galaxy, and this is one of the Galaxy's weakest spots, is transition defense, rest defense. They turn the ball over in bad spots, and then they're not in a good shape to contain what's happening in the other direction. Like, that's been an issue for them for a long time. So they were able to get numbers forward, and I think it was Brugman came back and tried to make a nice play and take it off of, I want to say,
Bouanga.
It was Bouanga's foot, and it just deflects to Vela, and Vela's in that area where if it's on his foot, it seems like he's burying that 99 times out of 100.
And it's once it falls, it's in. But the issue is, it's about 8.5 minutes after the original turnover. It's like the Galaxy never adjusted The original turnover was the pass
recovery
to
runs.
Buonga's foot for no reason. He's then 1-5.
Well, by the way, Carlos Vela had about a minute to sit and survey the. He's like, okay, well, it's four defenders in front of me. I have runners. I'm just going to stand here. There's no pressure on me. I'll pass it to Buonga. Okay, somebody should probably come recover now. They did.
And then Opoku makes the run down the left side. But the whole thing was so haphazard, lazy from the Galaxy. And I think you add in, Doyle, to your point of like, these are the things they do wrong. I think one of the issues for the Galaxy is just fear in the open field. No one wants to step in and lose a tackle because they think if they do, it's a train wreck behind them. So Buonga's 1-5 and no one steps in to try and win it off him early on in that situation. And then, so now you're defending in the final third because of that. And it falls for Vela. It's a little bit fortunate, but you create your own luck. And I think the LA Galaxy right now create their own bad luck in the way they handle all these moments.
Greg Vanney said you can't punish yourself, and they did. You go to the Sega Koulibaly penalty. Somehow I had just mind blanked the Tyler Boyd goal, but Koulibaly with a frankly insane tackle on Cifuentes so late, nowhere near the ball. It's sort of been the story of the
season. I mean, that was kind of the game changer, right? It was the substitution of Mavinga coming off and Koulibaly. Not that Mavinga was great, but like the difference between him and Koulibaly was pretty significant. And that's LAFC. If they see a weakness, they're able to, like, all that nice segment that I did on 360 from my high chair, like, it didn't apply at all. There was none of the patient, methodical build-up, pulling the opponent up back, working to create gaps to play line. Like, that's not the LAFC we saw in this one. LAFC we saw in this one was like, okay, let's just be solid through the midfield, and as soon as they commit turnovers, as soon as they do something stupid, we're going to crush them. And they did.
They were really smart in their way of the mentality of going into this game. And I, again, it's hard on 360 to watch all the games. It was actually so enjoyable for me on Sunday. I had my feet up on the couch. I mean, my four-year-old crawling all over my head. But tactically, I was like, hold on a minute. Is this how LAFC has been playing all season? But obviously not. But they did so well just with the turnovers, letting Galaxy play side to side. And it was that one bad back pass, that one sideways pass, or that one too many touches. And they're just so good on the break. And when you have someone like Buonga with the pace that he does and his cleverness as well, and then just the confidence.
Huge credit to Steve Cherundolo for what he's done with LAFC in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah.
Obviously, what did the Galaxy show us in this match?
I think what you come away from, especially after the press conferences post game, which I think we all felt, was last week Greg Vanney said we didn't show up with any level of intensity and you're not going to compete in Major League Soccer if you don't. They did that. So like part of the angle coming out of the game from both Chicharito and Greg Vanney was some of the things we asked of ourselves were there, but we lost. And that's where it's a weird spot. I think Chicharito used the term like there are better losses and worse losses, and this one was better. And I even think going in, even after that first goal, like they were competitive. I thought they were less disorganized. I thought their lines were a little bit cleaner. I thought they were tighter together. They didn't look dangerous, but that's one conversation.
They didn't look dangerous till they went to the 3-5-2.
Right, but they didn't look like a sieve defensively, except the goal they gave up.
Yep.
So it was a little bit better from them, and I don't know if that's something that Galaxy fans, after everything they've been through this year, will walk away with, but I think that was my first takeaway.
So what about the 3-5-2? Doyle, we've had a ton of discussions about...
It's just the same stuff, man.
But here's the question I'll ask you. Would it actually be better for them to do it from the start?
Is it game states?
Because when they play it, they're just down, and so they have to go chaotic to a certain degree, and there's less risk because you're down. Like, you just got to throw it at the wall.
I mean, I don't think the 3-5-2 is inherently chaotic.
Well, Greg thinks it does not give them the defensive structure... That's what he says.
It's just funny because they're so bad.
They're so bad defensively. So why not change it? Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you look at like I picked up my phone because when you were talking about the Vela goal, I wanted to rewatch it. And like Raheem Edwards, they're not getting with in the 4-3-3 because Tyler Boyd is pinching in. Like Raheem Edwards he's an attacker, man. And like Vela's out there by himself because Mavinga is trying to flare out and cover Vela, and then the deflection, and he's pinched inside now because I think it was Opoku sort of like trying to slide through for, and so Mavinga's trying to cover two guys, and like, okay, like the 4-3-3 is maybe a little bit more unstable in there. Like, if you had a third center back out there, maybe that gets covered.
Would it be a center back?
So that was what was interesting about the 3-5-2, the way they played it in this one. Caligari their new very attacking fullback ended up playing right center back for the final 20 minutes in the kind of Andy Nahar style that we saw a couple years ago.
Love that Nahar is just getting the, he's getting the titling.
Right? Well, I mean, he was the first that we had in MLS. He was like,
that's
really
Hernan
a ball.
Losada's legacy it, you're talking about, right?
And that alone.
And that's the line.
But that the Andy Nahar style sort of like ball carrying center back, it was a lot of fun. I think it led to the build up to the second Galaxy goal. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why Greg Vanney is being so stubborn about this, especially because the man won an MLS Cup playing a 3-5. Well, they didn't play 3-5.
Technically, yeah.
It was a diamond in the final, but it was a 3-5-2 for most of the season.
I still remember when that diamond came out, just being like,
yeah. I was so pissed.
Just going off your point, when Caligari was playing that third center back role, that's what you want, to keep Ricky Pouche higher up the pitch. Because I feel like when Galaxy gets lost, it's when frustration starts setting in with the midfield, and then they go ball searching. So you lose your balance everywhere. And if you are in that 3-5-2, naturally you have more numbers in the midfield where they've been struggling in turnovers. They've been struggling getting numbers back, defending behind the ball. So I actually think this system fits them way better. And like you guys alluded to, you're playing four at the back and you're giving up that many goals. It's time to change something up.
Yeah.
You're just unbalanced everywhere. And again, when you look back at when they are in that 4-3-3, they just look so unbalanced. Ricky Pouche looks out of sorts, and he's a good footballer. I mean, you see that when the ball he plays into Chicharito. I mean, he's a great footballer, but I just feel like he's not playing dangerous enough because they're just in the wrong part of the pitch, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like when he gets the ball, he's in his defensive third. So he's playing sideways. He's playing those little short passes instead of being clinical and dangerous and balling behind the back four. What are you laughing at, Gauz?
I just, nothing about you. I just remembered the argument with Kellen Acosta at the end of the game, which was like unhinged from Chicharito, which I think for the Galaxy you need. Like, you need him to be an emotional leader. You're 100% right. I was not thinking about anything soccer. I
say something crazy?
It just hit me again of, like, him just screaming at Kellen. And the way Kellen handled it was like, I'm just going to keep marking it.
And it's a different team with Chicharito as well. Because there's no leaders in that team. Yeah. Like, realistically, without him, who is the leader? Yeah, Ricky Pouche played at Barcelona, but is he a leader on this team?
No, it's like Brugman. Yeah. And I don't know who he connects with. Yeah. Not saying he doesn't. I just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, there's, like, an inspirational aspect to Chicharito.
Supposed to be Caceres. But
or
Douglas Costa, for instance, maybe just even on field in performance. I agree on Chicharito. There's an inspirational aspect. I want to take it back to Pouche. I think you're absolutely right. When he drops in, he doesn't have, and when he doesn't have runners in front of him as well, he also tends to put his head down and just think, I'm going to beat like three guys on the dribble. And then all of a sudden it's organized behind the Galaxy. And that's where they're just firing shots into defenders and not creating clear chances. It's when he has those runners in front, Doyle, and I know we had a little argument about this in the group chat. When he has runners in front of him and he's not thinking, I have to do this all myself, he picks the ball up, he turns, he instinctively plays a pass. He's one of the best players in Major League Soccer.
I
just haven't seen him in those positions or doing those things with any consistency last year or this year. And last year, that's what he was doing. And Chicharito was that runner.
Yeah, I think it's less runners in front of him. I think it's more pieces around him.
Yeah.
I think naturally he's not like a beat guy's chance creating 10 because he's through the Barcelona system. If he has pieces to play off of, it's one touch, it's two touch, it's quick, it's moving. And the Galaxy don't provide him with those pieces, or everyone else that's around him isn't comfortable doing what that is. And I think that's part of the problem is like he's probably an 8 in Barcelona, but that's a whole different system and a whole different world. And now he's here and he is good enough to be the best.
He's a pure 10, man.
But he's not.
No, he's definitely.
He is not.
But the problem is at Barcelona, they tried to play him as an 8, but he doesn't defend.
He was fantastic at Barcelona in the 8. The only issue is you have Pedri and Gavi that were coming through the system.
So he was.
And then the attitude his
passing is outrageous. He's the best passer of the ball in the league, but he doesn't defend. And so that's why, and if you don't defend, you can't really play as an 8 in Barcelona. And the other thing is like he's a little undisciplined and disciplined in terms of positioning. He does come to the ball too much. Like that's a knock on him. That was Xavi's knock on him in Barcelona. That's why Xavi said, all right, go to the Galaxy because we're not really going to use you that much. So like part of the 3-5-2 is like just put Delgado and Brugman behind him, give Pouche a completely free role, give him two flying wingbacks, give him two really good forwards who will make, you know, Chicharito is still the best forward we have in the league in terms of creating space, not just for himself, but for the rest of the attack. And just like make it like put the game at this guy's feet and you'll be back to what you were down the stretch last year. There's only Tyler Boyd had a nice goal. I think he's a useful player. You're not like that. We've seen it for a month now. Galaxy overloading one side, playing across the game channel, getting Tyler Boyd into isolation, and like he's not beating anybody off the dribble. Memo Rodriguez is not going to eviscerate a defender in space. He's a clever player. He's a useful little player, but he's not that type of winger. Douglas Costa is a zero. Efra Alvarez has gotten chance after chance after chance. He has done nothing. I don't understand. I'll say it again. I don't understand why Greg Vanney is being so stubborn about this. I also feel like we have just spent way too long analyzing a winless team. We're 20% of the way through the season.
They're hosting Austin next week.
Good luck.
We'll end it on that one. All right, let's talk Cascadia. It's 1-0 Sounders. All is well in Anders' world. He's thinking, okay, you know, first time in three games, we'll beat this team, this boogeyman.
Oh, we're crucifying Anders today.
Really, you set this one up too.
And then it all changed. Brian Schmetzer made a change. Dairon did what Dairon does. And at the end of this one, it's 4-1. Brian Schmetzer said afterwards, quote, "It's not another loss. It's against the Timbers. We have to go back to understanding that this is a rivalry." And I'm pretty sure Shane on Twitter is a Seattle fan. So he's saying that Portland is going to put up an inevitable We Beat Seattle banner that'll go right next to their MLS's back trophy. That's some good sour grapes there from Shane after a Anders tough burner. Watch, a tough experience at Portland. What do we think about this one? We said it beforehand. We're like, look, throw it all out the window when it comes to Cascadia, El Tráfico, some of these rivalries, and this league, oftentimes, logic is secondary. Not required, let's just say.
Yeah, it was, it ended up being exactly what we said, which was, I think there's a, you know, energy and cult of personality to Gio Savarese when his back's against the wall and when this team's back's against the wall, and it's also been the case against Seattle. And so it was a team that was muddling their way through this season so far. You lose Eric Williamson last week. Evander hasn't really delivered. You've got question marks across the front line. But you make the competition focused, which is just go beat Seattle, right? Like you save your season if you go beat Seattle, not, well, how do we work our way out of this? Who is our identity? What do we do? And that's historically been when Gio's been at his best, both in playoff runs and against the Sounders. I thought they... Similar to actually what I said with the Galaxy, I thought they were more structured throughout this game. Yep. And I was surprised. I thought Morris would have more space over the top. Thought there would be more options for Seattle to hurt them. Incredible goal from Seattle to open this thing up. The run, the cross, the movement, the finish from Rui Diaz. And then the Asprilla goal comes out of nothing. I mean, that's a moment of brilliance. That's not like how you built your team. But once they got that energy, everything came downhill
and
against
the
Sounders.
That came hand in hand with the shift that Brian Schmetzer made. And that quote you read, Wiebe, Schmetzer is pointing fingers, but he's pointing fingers at himself first. And he said in the post game, you know, I assess myself on this one. I'm going to look at the sub I made, which was to take off Leo Chu and bring on Eber. And switch to a 4-4-2. Switch from that 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1.
Just to give a little context on that, because maybe you didn't watch, you didn't see. They had been playing Leo Chu and then Jordan Morris up top. In this game, Schmetzer went to Leo Chu on the left. Jordan Morris went out to the right. Christian Roldan in concussion protocol.
Yeah.
And then Raul Ruidiaz up top.
Yeah, and they had been playing all game, 70 minutes, like the Sounders have played this year, which is complete control.
Yep.
The Timbers had nothing for 70 minutes. And Brian Schmetzer decided to go for the kill, bring out another forward, another goal scorer. Eber's been really good this year, and try to turn that 1-0 into 2-0, into 3-0. And we have seen this team do that. But when you bring on another forward like that, you do sacrifice some control of the game through central midfield. And that's what ended up happening. And then that goal that Dairon scored, and we're going to get into an interesting conversation on Dairon in a minute here. That goal that Dairon scored, yeah, it juiced the crowd. It juiced the team, obviously. I mean, you see a teammate score a bicycle kick like that in a rivalry game, you got to be running around just absolutely losing your mind.
I asked the guys on MLS 360, have any of you ever scored a bike? And all of them were like, no. Well, BWP was like, yeah, but it was more of like, I was already on the ground.
I can remember. It was like a sweep. It wasn't a bike.
But when you score like a banger goal like that at home in front of that crowd, that is a momentum changer. Like, as soon as that goal went in, I was like, game over for Seattle. Like, I know the subs played a factor, but when you're in Portland with that fan support, and then when you score a goal like that, I mean, not a lot of people score goals.
I love that he called his shot too, kind of. Did you hear that nugget? I think Zivin maybe had it on the broadcast in the sense that he scored one in training week.
No, it was Diego Valeri. He was at training the week before, and he scored the exact goal in training, and Valeri was like, he was training for this moment.
I like to think that Dairon only scores bicycles in training.
That's he's like the through ball or the ball across the six. He's like,
He's like, pop it up. I will just one. So I agree with you on what happened with the Sounders. And it's interesting that this is something Schmetzer is trying. But so in this game, no Jao Paulo, no Atencio, no Christian Roldan. So that
No, Jao Paulo. No Rusnak.
Yeah. So when you look at this team, you could have brought Kellen Rowe in and put him centrally. Danny Lavo. So I think part of it, 100%, is I think Schmetzer's trying to find ways to get all these guys on the field at times. At the same time, they are weirdly one of the deepest teams in the league and yet shallow at the same time. It's been a bizarre...
I don't think I agree with that.
Why?
Because I don't think they're shallow.
They don't have game-changing subs. Chu has been good as a starter recently.
Okay.
But when the Sounders are down, what do they do to change the game? They bring on a like-for-like center forward?
Or they go to the 4-4-2. I mean, it worked against St. Louis, right?
They had already scored, I think.
Yeah, they were up a goal, and they wanted to...
At home. Okay, fine.
Yeah. No, I mean,
But that's not changing the game. I'm saying changing the momentum of a game. How do they do that off the bench?
Okay. I mean, I think you might be underselling. I think, to again use Weeby's word, I think you might be over-indexing.
Why do you also pick up on that?
A little trendsetter on that. Yeah. I'm going to over-index on things that you can't explain happening in rivalry matches. So Dairon Asprilla scores a bike. Nathan scores. He had not scored since the first game he played in Major League Soccer, in which he scored two goals.
Only saves them for the
Gata scores.
I inexplicably love Nathan Fagaccia. Like, I don't know why. I think it's just the energy he plays with. Like, he seems like a good teammate. Anyway.
Nijgoda scores his first goal in 259 days, and then Juan David Mosquera scores a banger, which is the least unsustainable of all of those. I don't know. What place does he occupy in sort of this weird cult figure, but also legitimately maybe top five player in Timbers history? But like, what is his legacy right now? I love Dairon so much.
Let's just give Chris Reifer, who knows more about the Timbers than any of us could ever learn, combined, tweeted out, is Dairon a top five sounder?
Wow.
Top five Timber of all time.
I didn't hear it. Disrespect.
And he basically said, put in stone, right? Diego Chara, Diego Valeri, and Sebastian Blanco, probably. Those are the three that probably sit alone, undebatable, whatever you want to call it. Blanco, the last of the three, but still in there.
Yeah, you mix Chris Boyd in there.
For sure. Yeah. Piquion, was that the other guy's
nice.
Name?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Frederick, don't talk about Frederick like that.
And Samuel Armenteros. Those are the other three. So, the question then becomes who's next. And I believe his point was Asprilla is like fourth all-time in appearances. And then maybe in goals as well. But the quality of his goals is the thing that we all know him for when you talk about the cult of personality. He scores in the playoffs.
He scores against the games, Sounders.
And he scores against Seattle.
Yeah.
That might be enough
for
a fan base. And he's also like the longest, I guess, besides Chara, he's the longest tenured.
Yep. I mean, he was there for their MLS Cup win, which is almost a decade ago.
It's wild.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So
that's impressive, by the way.
For a guy who it felt like for three or four straight years was on the verge of being cut because he would come in for two games and then we wouldn't see him again for 6 weeks. for year after year after year that happened. And then
until the leaves changed.
Yeah.
And then he would wake up every year in the playoffs.
Mr. October.
I think Lurdes Mabiala is on the list. He spans multiple MLS Cup teams, although he didn't win it. And I think he's been at the center when they've been good post Caleb's teams. Mm-hmm. So I guess we're in the GS Everest era and talk about that.
Nagby has to be on there.
Yeah, he has to be on there.
Does he? Okay.
I think as a foundation, for me,
I just love him. I think he epitomizes, like, if I think of MLS players that always come to mind, I think of Nagby. Any team would want a Darlington Nagby in their side.
Yeah.
I think drafted by the club, played in two MLS Cups, won one.
Did he lost? Sorry, he won. Did he make the switch after
17 to 18? And he then he won was
MLS
Atlanta
Cup
team.
In
well,
Atlanta.
He played in two MLS Cups at Portland.
Yes. That's my point. But he did win the one, and he was their foundational star for much of, because he was the first draft.
Fernando Adi.
Yeah, Fernando's in there.
But didn't he score about 45 goals over the course of 3 years? He was a starting nine on their MLS Cup team. That's a tough one to omit.
I would add, so to me, it would be Mabiala and Ridgewell.
I was going to throw Ridgewell in there as well.
Mm. He stabilized the team that won Cup.
And
he came back into the team.
I'll just say they absolutely blew it with Jeremy Abobase. If they had just played Jeremy Abobase as a number nine from the start, he would be third or fourth on this list in Penn, period.
Although they did play him in 18.
They were not looking like an MLS Cup threat until he started playing as a nine down the stretch and in the playoffs. And then they come back in 19 and they play him on the wing for some reason. And then 20 happens, and midseason, all the other forwards are hurt. So midseason being MLS is back. And who starts as number nine? Jeremy Abobase. I think he was second leading scorer in MLS is back. They won MLS is back with him playing as a number nine. And as soon as they come out of that, he's back to the wing. It's the most ridiculous talent assessment of the past half decade.
Look at Doyle dropping MLS's back stats. I know, we're really here on a Monday.
Deep into, like, I all sorts loved of MLS's so brandies.
Doyle, when you read the Sounders tweet, he was like, yeah, that banner is sick.
how many games do you think Diego Valeri played for Portland? And Diego Chara?
Chara's,
I think he over just 300. Hit the 400. Was it the
391.
391.
All comps or MLS?
Valeri's.
I think it's.
Are we looking wiki?
No, I'm MLSsoccer.com. No, I'm transfer.
275 for Diego Valeri.
309.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Think about it. Like, in the course of what, 18 months, they got one of the best D mids and one of the best number 10s in MLS history. Yeah. And they still managed to miss the playoffs two times in 3 years.
So smart scouting strategy. Just control F Diego, and then you just.
I also want to add in this conversation, I think past these first three guys, it kind of becomes hard, which was surprising to me, in a way in which, one, it's credit to those guys.
Yep.
Like, the base of Char and Valeri meant everything else could move and shift and be good or bad, and they were going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. I also do think it's a nod a bit to the environment. Like, the city and the market and the stadium.
It's amazing.
Because I think they stay relevant at times when the team isn't totally where it should be on the field. And they have, like, okay, maybe Nagby, but, like, Abobase didn't work out. There are not many guys that came through in Portland and, like, stayed for a while, which is what allowed Seattle to have Jordan Morris and Christian Roldan and guys like
Brad
that.
Brad Evans.
Chad Marshall. Right. Although not really. Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
They don't really have a ton of examples of that, except. And then they've signed Chara and Valeri. But yeah.
I love that you said the fans, because it is really cool. I lived there for only one season. I was only there with the Portland Thorns. And the games that we go to for both the Thorns and the Timbers, just even the littlest things, like the roses they give out to the women, the cutting the timber for the men. I asked Diego on the weekend on 360. I was like, off air, I was like, what do you do, like, with all your logs? And he donates them. Because I'm thinking, can you build? You could probably build a home out of all the logs that you've had.
You could build a shed.
Yeah, he said he kept one, and it was from, I forget what game it was, but he's only ever kept one. He's donated them all to fans and everything around.
I'm thinking end table. I'm thinking, like, a stacked end table, maybe.
Dad energy right
now. Yeah, you're
definitely not
building. You watching this Thorns team at all?
What's that?
You watching this Thorns team?
I can't not, you guys, you know. Christine Sinclair, my Janine Becky.
They're a wagon right now.
Yeah. Okay, anyways.
City is back. City is back. St. Louis City, of course. They're laying claim to the city moniker. What do we think our font's at this week, guys?
32.
Higher.
No, wait. Does it go up and down two every time?
I think even more because they scored five goals.
You know, we're throwing some of the rules out the window here.
I didn't know that there was...
Goals against the Shield leaders, you get a little bit of...
Okay.
What do you think? So 32 is not...
I'm going to say 36 because I just put the cursor
well
on.
Done. Well done.
Oh, you... I'm on the thing.
It
come
was
on, 5-0
Caitlin. At one
no,
point.
No. Be proud that you lost the right way rather than the cheater over here.
Hey, a win's a win. Doesn't
so,
matter if you
So, more
cheat.
Than two-hour delay, and we referenced it off the top here, tornado warnings, torrential downpour, crazy weather. This is, again, Midwestern spring. Yes.
I think it's the wildest thing I've ever heard, and you're like, it's super average.
Yeah, you were like, what?
Yeah, people just people get
you know
used to tornado warnings.
How many times I've been around a tornado in my life? Probably
just
zero.
Get used to it. It can be scary if it's right on top of you, but you sort of develop a... let's call it a radar of your own to understand when it is truly dire and when you can sort of chill. A lot of people like to go out in their yards and watch this stuff. It's like Midwestern stuff.
I saw pictures. People were tweeting at me using the hashtag MLS360, and my jaw hit the floor. I'm like, cancel the game. What are you doing? Everyone go home. Lock yourself in your basement, whatever you use for tornadoes. It was like the scariest thing I've ever seen, and I grew up in minus 50 blizzards, okay? And I still got sent to school, but that was insane.
Yeah. And St. Louis fans are just going to the concourses and hitting up the beer vending machines.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you do.
All right.
Here's what Bradley Carnell had to say. They were up 5-0, and Cincinnati got a goal late on. No Lucho in this game for Cincinnati. No Brenner. He's going to be sold to Udinese, it looks like. Here's the quotes from Bradley Carnell. Quote, "We never really wanted to speak about anything being broken." Of course, they'd lost two straight games. "We're the creators of our own destiny." He's like a motivational guru.
Oh, Weeby's all in.
Weeby's wearing the jersey.
"If external expectations are growing after 8 match days, we know where those expectations were before match day 1. That's a question for the three of you. I've always been a believer."
Yeah, oh, yes.
And literally everything this team has done. Dylan Biles hit us up and said, "Hey, I'm an Austin fan still waiting for a ruling on this from last year. If they aren't just feeding a narrative, then the crew should be calling St. Louis wins bonus games right up to the playoffs." Kevin Morris, another Austin fan, you can see where some of their attention might be lying right now. They don't want to look at themselves. They're looking around the league. "Should St. Louis be concerned about how much they're overperforming their XG? They are overperforming at a very high rate on this side. Connor hit us up. He's a Minnesota fan. He says, "As an expansion side with Europeans, quote unquote, backups and bargain players, their quality is now undeniable. What does this mean for the way so many MLS clubs seek to build out their rosters and make money off of flipping players?" And Vunder James says, "Is St. Louis's success more due to the front office identifying underutilized pieces on other teams or to Carnell getting more out of the talent he's giving?" And we have a bunch of questions about whether they're overachieving or lucky, or are they actually this good and nobody really saw it coming. What do you make of a 5-1 win in a game that we build as like this uber clash? Mm-hmm. And then Cincinnati just sort of got run off the field.
If I want to get myself in trouble here, I'd say I think there's a lot of this that's outlier. No Lucho, no Brenner, a 2.5-hour delay. Like that sort of gears itself up for home team comes out with energy. I thought St. Louis played well. I think Pat Noonan sort of hit it on the head after, which is like, we were really inefficient, but the game was not skewed to St. Louis, right? It was Jared Stroud, second ball out on a free kick, sets the tone at 1-0, and then I think fairly even, and then you get another sort of special moment with a deflection, and Lovin puts it in, and like 3-0 at halftime, you're obviously going to win at home unless maybe you're the Chicago Fire or something like that.
Don't speak about my Chicago Fire team like that, all right?
But I think for St. Louis, and sort of one of the comments here, I think from Connor, there sometimes soccer can be a weak link game. And right now, St. Louis don't have a weak link, and they don't make self-inflicted mistakes like we just talked about with the Galaxy.
Yep.
And so they are able to maintain a high level, and then they've taken advantage of moments that have popped up for them. I don't know that I would say, I mean, I think we should have a Cincinnati conversation because there's other
Let's
stuff.
Do it. We talked so much about St. Louis. We don't have to sing their praises. But to go to your point, it was basically dead even XG, 1.5 for both teams.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I mean, they did overperform on the day.
That's why you don't look at XG.
Hey, no, whoa. Who gave a shout out for using XG on 360 on the weekend? This girl. Nice. Okay? So I'm learning. I'm learning as I go. I'm okay.
Expected shout outs were very high.
They're just a data nerd.
Yeah.
I'm just going to point out that while they are overperforming their expected goals on the season, and obviously on the day, I don't think expected goals necessarily told the story of that particular game. When you look at some of the more advanced models that take into account more than just shots, they actually rate out a lot higher. American Soccer Analysis, their goals added metric, which I'm still wary of all-in-one metrics, but it's very, very good. They've put in a ton of work on it. It tells the truth much more often than it lies. They have St. Louis, I think, sixth in the league. On XG, they're around 11th or 12th. And what the goals added metric and all-in-one stuff like this measures is, do you get the ball into good spots on the field? Mm. Do you allow opponent teams to get the ball, the opponents to get the ball in good spots on the field? It's not just chance generation. It's like, do you have the underlying structure to repeatedly build chances? So those actually net out, say that St. Louis nets out higher than simple XG. I don't think they have as much to worry about. I don't think they're going to win Supporters Shield. Right now they're winning, they're leading Supporters Shield. I don't think they're winning Supporters Shield.
Not on points per game.
They're not?
Well, I think LAFC is one behind with one game less played.
Yeah. Well, I don't think
so
they're...
So saves you there.
Yeah. I don't think they're a Supporters Shield winning team. I do think that they're very, very good.
I think this is a team that can go on a run in the playoffs, though, because of the spine of the team. You look at the spine, Berkey and Net. I know you... Just let me finish my point, okay? And then you can crucify me. Tim Parker in the back. True leader, and you can see that. And it's very rare, I think, in Major League Soccer where you do have someone with that much experience. But then just... I'm a big person with a team. If you have one very good center back that can control everything in front of you, have the communication, the right communication as well, especially with your team that presses, is so important because you have to organize so quickly and you can't just leave that up to your goalkeeper. But they have two very good leaders in those two back lines. Berkey, obviously the goalkeeper, and Tim Parker. Then you have Indiana Vasilev that just doesn't stop working. I saw him at Inter Miami and I was actually a little bit shocked that he wasn't used more in that role. Like he's not a player that maybe he'll be like that wow factor all the time. But the work that he does off the ball really does go unnoticed. Leuven for me has been a really fun midfielder. And then you have Klaus up top. I didn't know anything about him, honestly. Yeah. I'm going to put myself completely honest until coming into Major League Soccer. Those five players through the spine of your team, I think this, I don't know, it's going to be an exciting team.
The pushback I'll give on that is that what we've seen over the course of the past decade is you need special high-level match winners to win MLS.
You don't think Klaus is that?
I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
Like, he's been very, very good. He's, you know, he scored those three goals off of back passes. Yep. Other than that, he's got two. So it's, you know, I don't think that's going to happen in the playoffs. He's really unselfish. You can see it on the Kyle Hebert goal. Like that header that Klaus had, like, into the left channel to... did he get Johnny Nelson on the ball?
I think it was Nelson.
Yeah. Like he's really smart. He's really unselfish. They're a really good team that's going to bring it every week. Yeah. We're going to see him in the postseason. Mm-hmm. I question whether or not they have enough high-end talent, special talent.
Yeah.
But either way, the big story right now at this point for St. Louis is we're probably going to end up talking about Bradley Carnell in the same way that we talk about Jim Curtin and Wilfred Nancy in terms of developing young or marginal players, guys like Jared Stroud, guys like John Nelson, Jake Nowinski.
I love that John Nelson schooled Cincinnati. He couldn't get on the field when they...
I mean, he played 1,500 minutes
last year. It felt like they were always looking for a replacement at fullback, especially on the right side, and he was in the team, and there was... just kind of, and I get Barrial has worked for them in that spot, but
Doyle, do you want to put Italian on it? Sorry, just put a bet on it.
You gotta take it offline. You gotta
see,
take
here's
it
the thing.
Now I'm gonna 5 minutes fun, in. We're Weeby. 55 minutes in. I'm about to get the elbows out.
Bring it on.
All right, Cincinnati. This is just for David Goss, so we can get through all these other match day. Faith, Cincinnati loss, just a fluke or sign of what's to come? Scott Foltz, is Cincinnati over reliant on Lucho? Is any team more over-reliant on a single player than Cincy on Lucho?
I think you would say the Revs and Carlos Heel, right?
Well, I might. I might, but I think you are also probably right, and I'll give you credit for this. It's just the nature of Major League Soccer.
If you lose that guy, team wins. Maybe LAFC, because Minnesota. If Buongo
went out.
Maybe
that's the genius of St.
Louis. Is Minnesota winning?
They've lost two games. They've got to figure it out at home. Okay.
So on Cincinnati, I think if Lucho is at... Lucho and Brenner is two I think they're two separate conversations. And I do think if they lose Brenner for the season because they sell him and he doesn't play anymore, that is a huge concern for them. But Lucho is the big one. And I think two things happen in this game for me. One is just losing the quality of Lucho and the outlet and the guy you can play through all the time. He creates moments out of nothing. The other is then what Pat Noonan did to replace him, which was he basically went with three forwards across the front line. And it killed the space for the wingbacks. So if you were to say, who's going to be your best creator if Lucho's out, I think most people would assume it's Barrial down the left wing. You killed Barrial's space by putting Queimi Ordoñez in that space by trying to just play three center forwards because you don't have a backup to Lucho Acosta. So if he's out long term, Cincinnati has to have a different solution rather than we're just going to play as many attacking pieces as we can and hope that it works. I do actually think there could be a fun way in which you pull Vasquez a little deeper and you play often. His feet are good.
Have him play like Klaus does.
Exactly. His feet are good. He likes to create for teammates. He is unselfish.
Yep.
There's no other player on this roster. So if it's not that, it's got to be a third center mid and you just press harder and you try and create chances out of possession through those spots.
Give it to me straight. Should Cincy be concerned? Because it's all well and good to win games ugly, but if you're not playing... And
sometimes you have to play good soccer.
Yeah.
And they haven't done that yet this year. I think there should be a little bit of concern. I think there's a good chance that this team finds their form and their chemistry once Brenner is sold.
Oh, interesting.
It's too big of an issue.
Yeah, that's okay.
Right. Do you think, but Brandon Vasquez, he's being linked overseas as well, so if he goes, then what do you do?
I'm
concerned.
Then it becomes a talent thing.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of a personality thing with Brenner now, and maybe it's not as great in the locker room as you would think of a team that was unbeaten.
Okay. Revs and crew, keep it rolling here. Go USA, which we always respect just as a general concept and call.
Even Kalen respects that.
What?
USA, that's the iconic call. It says, who cursed Kalen, the Reds in good. Columbus? So they're locked in an internal battle of draws. There have been a lot of draws between these teams of late. This one came very late from Sean Zawadzki. Deep into stoppage time, you might say. Too deep into stoppage time, Bruce Arena would say. I did the math on this one, just so you know. Ball out of play for a Farrell video review, possible handball. I think it was a good no handball call, but it took 3 minutes and 13 seconds or so of ball out of play to get that decided. It never actually went to review. So that happens in the 89th. The way that referee... process works with additional time, added time, is that they are determining that number 86th minute or so, maybe 88th, that's the latest. You got to get that in, confirm it. Everybody knows, the crew knows.
Did Christina tell you this? Christina Uncle confirmed this with
Christina yes. Uncle used it on MLS 360.
Well, look at that. I got,
come on, give yourself
some tentacles
love.
In the refereeing world,
give,
all right?
Give yourself some
been
love.
Doing it, been doing it
there's
all
no
time.
Chance there's a ref out there that likes Andrew Weir.
Let us know. Hate chance. Or love, you or just, you know, tolerance. I'll take any of that. So anyway, there's 3 minutes, 13 seconds of additional time that's going to be needed to be added. And center refs have the discretion, once it goes into that added time, to basically do whatever they think is right. It's not like we're on a stopwatch. But this goal is scored at 97:42, which is about 30 seconds before that 3 minutes and 13 of added would be added onto the 5 minutes of stoppage. So I don't think Bruce has legs to stand on that. I would not say that to Bruce's face, probably.
Oh, yes, you would.
I
would never.
Yeah, Bruce and I would have a spirited discussion. Everything he knows he learned from this podcast.
Yeah, that's true.
You could
say
that
one. But if you want good Italian, though, in the New York area, Bruce,
Bruce is
your
definitely
guy.
Your guy.
Really?
He worked at a pizza shop on Long Island when he was younger.
Uh-huh. Here's a more interesting big picture question, because we've talked a lot about these two teams recently. Delta Falcon. Last week, you spoke about off-field moves that changed the trajectory of a club like Nancy to the Crew or Ernie and Ernst to Philly in their academy. Has there ever been a bigger club trajectory delta than Bruce Arena taking over the Revs?
The one that came to mind was Peter Vermees taking over the Wiz.
Yes. Well, they were the Wizards, technically, but yes, it's more fun to say the Wiz.
And I know that feels weird to say right now with with Sporting down at the very bottom
down
of the
bad.
Western Conference. Yeah. Real bad. But for 15 years, they've been really good for about a dozen of them. And
they also
were
rebranded.
Yeah.
Like everything about them.
Professionalized.
Well, he just built, I mean, everything soccer-wise that they have, he built.
Like, and there's also an argument that Peter Vermes was the first, like, super tactical coach to come into MLS with the 4-3-3 and certain rotations.
High press, yeah.
And the high press, of course, like the first high press, like real high pressing team in MLS was. So that's one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think Tim Bezbachenko and Greg Vanney in Toronto, the years are a little bit skewed there because Bez came in and then they let Ryan Nelson go, I think it was last, and then elevated Greg Vanney. But Toronto was a laughingstock of Major League Soccer to the point where they built it like they thought a mega team and all they need to do was tie, I believe, at New York to make the playoffs in
2009.
Yeah, for the
in
first 2009, time.
It's still the worst regular season loss I have ever seen an MLS team take.
And they had brought Dwayne De Rosario back.
And this was when the Red Bulls were the worst team in the world. and Toronto went there on decision day, which it was not called then, on decision day. And I think they lost 4-0. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another one that stands out.
You have to put a couple Bruce Arenas in there. I don't think you would count DC originally, but if you're talking about just Club Delta, I mean, the club didn't exist, and he turned it into possibly the biggest juggernaut in MLS history. And then the other juggernaut of the Galaxy, and they were down bad. Did Beckham want to stay? Rude Gullit, all this. Alexi got removed, let's say. A lot of turnover, and he turned them into a, you know, one of the best. I love Alexi.
Anders just crushed you. Chat, I love that you can't hear.
I can't see it. No, he talked to you guys. Wow. You're talking trash on me in their ears while we're doing the show, Anders.
To be fair,
not
I
right.
didn't hear anything.
So,
not right.
But I think the Bruce Arena Galaxy one's a shout because also.
It's not the same, though.
But you were in danger of Beckham not the Beckham not mattering, right?
That's fair.
And like Landon leaving, who knows? Like, when Bruce came in, it was such an unknown with the Galaxy, and you could argue maybe less for the Galaxy, more for the league about what it was for that team to become a super team. So I think that's a fair one, and that's obviously the cross with what you're looking at.
Garth at RSL.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Garth at Atlanta might end up being that, given what happened over the past three seasons.
Pat Noonan.
Yeah, and Pat Noonan Albright. And Chris
would be,
Albright.
Would it be Pat, I think it'd be Chris Albright, right?
Yeah,
I think you're combining
them. It's a package
deal. Yeah. But that's 3 years. We're obviously not putting expansion teams in if people don't notice that. Because
yeah, you can't just be like, hey.
They didn't reset, but Tata and guys like that would be pretty big in that conversation. I think that's most of them that are that
I'm big. Trying to think of teams that were just horrendous. Just were so bad and then turned it around.
I'm shocked that you haven't said Robin Fraser yet. I'm kidding. It's just
You know, they were in a bad spot,
but they're not in that great a spot. Yeah,
and Colorado in that scenario, similar because I was thinking about the Crew because Crew have had years where it's like this is unwatchable, but Pablo had put them in a spot as the best team in the Western Conference in what 2016.
Yep.
So like they had, and that's the same with the Crew where it's like when it's gotten at its worst, their span between being relevant was not. Irrelevant was not that long, where some of these other teams are a lot worse. And then with the Revs, what's interesting, because I've gotten some messages about this, when you look at MLS originals, the Kansas City, I think you could argue, are the most successful, maybe
Galaxy. Outside the Galaxy, maybe. DC.
But is...
He's not talking on-field success.
I'm talking both.
Okay.
Over the long term, but especially over the last 8 years.
Yeah.
I don't know that DC, the stadium's great, but I don't know as a team that the relevancy has increased. Kansas City clearly has, right?
Yeah.
The rebrand, everything, the winning, the pressing, open cups, all that stuff. And now the Revs might be like the next one, and Columbus. But Columbus had to rebrand, build two stadiums, and do all of that. So it's interesting.
Would you say, I'm trying to think here, who was the manager of the Quakes? They were so bad to start in MLS, and then 01
Dom
they took
Canoe?
Off.
Oh, Frank Calloway. Well,
yeah. So
I think Lori Calloway was the first manager.
I was going to say, I was trying to figure out who took
over.
Well, Lori
Calloway was the original one that Wijnaldum and the San Francisco Seals.
Well, no, it would have been Frank Yallop taking over from Lothar Osiander. So I think you could put Frank Yallop in that.
But they lost the team 4 years after that.
Well, that's not his fault. They won championships.
I don't think it changed the Delta if they didn't exist.
Well, the Delta is four titles.
No, the Delta is that they literally didn't exist as a team.
Okay, Andre says we're moving on. One thought on all of these: Minnesota 1, Orlando 2. Props to the Minnesota United supporters. Some incredible TIFO. Quote, we are on native land. I think you should go read about the inspiration behind that TIFO. It was really beautiful, and I thought well done by their supporters. So Parker McNally says, with two disappointing losses after an unbeaten run in the first five matches, what can Minnesota United do to rally, and will the signing of Sangbing John possibly be enough? Kaylin, we're throwing it to you on this one.
I knew you were. I was going to see myself stage right here and just exit the building. Look, Minnesota against Orlando had numerous opportunities. It is clear. I mean, you can ask anyone that knows Major League Soccer. You can ask any of the Minnesota fans. They need a number nine. They've never had a number nine that's either worked if they've signed them. They need to go out and splash big money for a good number nine that you know is going to produce, that is a proven goal scorer in a big league. Unfortunately, you have $5 million wrapped up in Emmanuel Reynoso. Is he coming back to Minnesota? Probably not, but you're hoping he is because you don't want to throw $5 million down the drain as an ownership group. But I think in order for Minnesota to be successful, you have to get the number nine position right. I like the new signing. He's just not fit. I spoke to Adrian Heath. I said, what are you making of him? He said he's got all the tools in Major League Soccer to be successful. He's just not fit right now.
Did the new signing meaning Mender Garcia? Or
Sangbing John. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
But he's not a nine.
The number 10 role. Yeah. But this is what I'm saying. This is why they need that number nine.
Yeah.
Mender Garcia, we touched on this. Why is he on the bench? Because he's like, that one was kind of like an interesting one to me because maybe it was the partnership with your new signing of Sangbing John.
Sangbing John.
Maybe he saw something in training that maybe we didn't see. I didn't have that conversation with him. I don't speak to him after losses for obvious reasons. But yeah, the Mendo Garcia, when you do have a goal scorer, that's the only one really scoring goals on your team. But again, I don't know the ins and outs behind that because I stick away from conversations with Adrian after losses.
I would do the same.
Yeah.
Would do the
especially
same.
To
any
Orlando.
Thoughts of dunking?
Yeah, not when it's like it hurts, right?
Duncan McGuire dunks here, or you save that for Wednesday?
It feels slash like Atlanta Thursday. A little bit, where Atlanta needed to get some players in this offseason who didn't need the ball to be effective. Because everybody on that Atlanta team last year wanted ball to feet, and everybody that Oscar Pereja is starting right now in attack wants ball to feet or wants to pull out into the channel, run in the channel. And like Duncan McGuire is just a forward. He doesn't need the ball to be effective. And I think he makes the game easier on Ojeda and Torres and Pereira just by occupying the opposing.
Want to give congrats to the Houston Dynamo. Go to Red Bull Arena. Draw 1-1. Had a lead. Lost the lead late on. Omar Fernandez with a goal that I think Benny Olsen's going to look at and say, man, what were we doing marking here on this? He's sort of standing alone right inside the six-yard box. But a nice goal, as I said on the wrap-up. Go check that one out on MLS Season Pass. Curl to curl, Ivan Franco to Coco Carrasquilla. And I would recommend going to Twitter. And if you're not following Victor Ariza already, you should be. A-R-A-I-Z-A. He writes about the Dynamo for the striker, and he had some really pointed questions for Benny, in Benny's opinion, too many, because he's been asking him every week about
not
Sebastian
even that
Ferreira.
Pointed, by
no,
the way.
It's like, why literally is your DP striker not playing? And Benny's like, zero you asked minutes. Me this last week. Yeah, because he didn't play last week.
And you're not
week.
Scoring goals.
Again, he's a DP.
Yeah,
so. But he's like, not really answered the question, has he?
No, he has not.
Which is weird.
Which is strange.
No, he has used it as an opportunity to compliment other players like Corey Baird and Thor Jofarsson.
Which is sort of answering the question in omission.
Yeah.
Right.
And choosing to focus on what you want to focus on. But this is not a team with enough talent to not use a designated player over the course of a season.
So especially when they desperately need goals.
Yeah, you desperately need goals. And maybe he doesn't fit into the system, or maybe he's not buying into what Houston are trying to build there. But if you're trying to get rid of him, you need to play him so his value doesn't go down. No? Am I wrong on this?
He also scored 13 goals for you last year, and your team was bad. So, like, what happened last year that worked, and can you not find similar situations for him there? Or if you had him and you were like, oh, this guy's not going to buy in, that was the time to
move
him
in the offseason. You also got to put some
Brought in Ivan Franco, and part of their conversation was him and Sebas played together in Paraguay. They know each other. Yeah. They like playing together. That was part of their buy-in.
You also have to put some of this on Ferreira.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
played. He hasn't 100%. Produced.
Yeah. No.
And if he's not earning the spot in training.
But sometimes, I will say, sometimes players aren't practice players. And I'm going to go back to your point. 13 goals last season when you were playing in a side that's not good. So maybe there's something more, again, that we don't know that's going on behind the scenes. But You can put blame on the player for not getting it.
In front of goal in training, but obviously Benny's looking at you in training saying, whatever you're doing here is not what I want to see.
Okay,
so prime, ain't getting in.
Prime example of this, Kyle Larin. Terrible in training. Unbelievable in games. Now showing up in La Liga overseas and one of the top goal scorers for an Espanol team. So I get it. I completely get where you're coming from. Where a manager, you're thinking you're crap in training. You don't defend well in training. You're bad on our small-sided games. But if a player shows up in games and he's your DP, you play him.
To be fair, we also don't know what he's doing.
We're making up stories here.
He has showed up in games this year. The body language between himself and his teammates tends to be
expressive.
Yeah. And this is a club that got new management last year, and they hired and fired a manager in 1 year because they are trying to fix a culture. So I can understand Benny of he's trying to set a tone. Yeah. If this guy's not following that tone, especially if you're trying to get Ace on board, no one can be bigger than
you're,
the
you're
team.
Ignoring the hand signal. We've been trying to take it back.
That's the hand
signal. Don't put the hand signal.
When it goes middle of the table, if you're watching on Apple or YouTube,
why are you going
when you go
out
the table?
Behind my laptop?
We wants to do another 15 minutes on the Galaxy.
I would, but Anders is ruining our party.
What's the hand from the Adams family? What is that thing?
A thing.
Yeah, thing. That's what it reminded me of.
Dallas 2, RSL 1. Rick asks, what are FC Dallas like, really? Are they a playoff team? Are they just stuck in the middle? What's up, Doyle? What's up?
They're trying to figure that out. They're trying to figure out if they have more than one way to play. Last year, it was a very controlled positional play, 4-3-3, with Jesus Ferreira as a false nine. Everything was about making sure they kept their shape, making sure that they didn't expose themselves too much. It ended with them having the second best defense in the league, the best in the Western Conference. They made the playoffs. They lost points over the course of the year because they weren't able to turn those 1-0s into 2-0. And right now, what Nico Estevez is doing is saying, okay, let's get more guys who are good in the box out onto the field and try to turn 1-0s into 2-0s. He's doing that by playing pretty traditional 4-4-2 with Leggett on one side and Paul Areola on the other because Velasco hasn't been out there as much.
He's got a knock right now.
He does. Jesus Ferreira is playing up top with Jesus Jimenez, and Jimenez's ability to occupy center backs is leading to goals exactly like the one Ferreira scored to open proceedings this weekend. They generated 3 more shots on the night. So their inability to control midfield, control the ball in a 4-4-2 means that they are not getting enough chances to the guys who are supposed to fix the problem, which was goal scoring last year. So they're kind of stuck in the middle. I think it says a lot about the talent they have that they're still getting results anyway, but I don't think this is anything near a finished product. And I'm not sure that the 4-4-2 as they're playing it is a solution.
So Paul Areola pulled out of the US camp with the hamstring injury. So something to watch, but congrats to Baxton Pomykal, who's just, he's not back to where he wants to be. He may never, but it's cool that, you know, for him that he's fought through so many injuries and he's had the ups and downs, I think, emotionally of just expectations and what's happened. So to get to go to a US-Mexico game and be a part of that team is just special for him.
Knee injury, by the way, for Velasco. San Jose 3, Sporting Kansas City 0. Robert Castellanos gets a dog-so, red-so, and it all goes downhill from there. 2 goals in 8 games for Sporting Kansas City.
Two red cards.
Yeah.
So 2 goals, 2 red cards.
There's a number of self-inflicted errors, whether it's on that or offside traps gone awry or whatever else you want to throw at Kansas City right now. Nothing is working, and they've got to find a way to get any sort of momentum. Meanwhile, the Quakes, man, 5th, and we've got people hitting us up. Lucas Gloeg says, Gloeg is my guess, G-L-O-E-G-E. I'm going to struggle there. Sorry, Lucas. He says the Quakes are a sleeper team. We're not sleeping on them. We haven't been sleeping on them. They've been very good this year. Speaking of positional play, I think Lucci has brought that to San Jose, and I love the quotes. I think it was last week, maybe, that came out that were like from Jackson Ewell, and he was like, "Hey, it's a lot different than it was before. We all know exactly where to be, how to be, how the game is going to be played, and that changes things for San Jose." Montreal 0, DC 1. Boy, Montreal not creating anything.
They showed highlights after the game in the stadium, and it was like, oh, there's a cross that went over the crossbar. It was rough. It was tough.
Lewis O'Brien gets his first goal for DC, and I think I saw somewhere Pablo Maurer maybe tweeting this out, that the purchase price on him goes way down if Nottingham Forest gets relegated.
Ooh, interesting.
So that's just
there was a Lewis O'Brien super fan at the game, had a sign just for him, called out to him, he came over. I don't know where that person
Everybody
came out of the woodwork,
yeah.
But yeah, that person was at the game.
Okay, NYC Nashville. I got a bunch of Nashville fans hollering at us about their players not named Hani Mukhtar in the attacking part of the field not producing nearly enough. I think we'll save a deeper conversation on this game for midweek on NYC as well. And might do that with Tommy Scoops because it's 1 week until the primary transfer window closes in Major League Soccer. We've identified the number nine position for NYCFC as a spot that could be filled, and it'd
they
be nice if it was.
Two U22 initiative openings after getting rid of Thiago Andrade, and Talis Magno is no longer playing as a number nine for NYCFC. So I kind of expect them to make a move.
Ooh. LAFC have an open DP spot. It sort of feels, well, feels quite doubtful that they would fill it in this window, but maybe I'm wrong about that given the way that they're playing. Last year they surprised us all with the level of ambition in the face of like, oh no, they would never, and they did. So we'll see.
Last year we thought they'd bring Gareth Bale in as a DP, and then they didn't. They brought in Dennis Bwanga and still signed Gareth Bale and Christian Teo.
Don't put anything past John Thorrington is what we're telling you right now.
John Thorrington's like, you like this team? I can change every piece and still win next week.
Kaylin identified Minnesota, the number nine position. Yep. Maybe it's too early for that as well, but
it won't happen. It won't happen right now. I don't think.
Keep an eye on that one for them. And then Dave, you had suggested maybe the Galaxy from outside MLS because we're a week away from not being able to make those moves this summer.
Yeah, their punishment, the same one that Chris Klein's dealing with. As a club, they can't bring players in from outside of Major League Soccer in the summer transfer window. So this will be their last window where they could bring a player in and still have them registered to play in the playoffs. So they could make trades after this. They could make in-league loans. But it feels like there's a talent deficit for this squad. They're not really a club, unless the Julian Raujo money is different than I think, that has a ton of MLS assets because of how they've used international spots and the players they've used. So they don't really seem like a team that's going to go drop $1.3 million allocation for an MLS, you know, veteran or something like that, which feels like if they're going to improve this roster, is going to have to happen in the next week.
I just want to point out real quick that Dave Romney and Daniel Starris are starting for teams that are currently
Daniel Starris doing
above
it right
the playoff
back
line. Yeah.
So we missed a team and a game on this show. And how many minutes are we in, Anders? Let me know here. We're 70. No, we're 81 minutes in.
You know
so
what?
It probably makes
it.
Sense. It probably makes sense that we forgot about the Fire because late in games, the wow. Fire forget about
Do
the
I
Fire.
Do I get to talk about them?
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Give it to us. 2-2 draw, Fire up 2-0. And wah, wah.
I know.
They show signs of life. It's just that
David Goss Golden Boot team, big game.
They get tired. They get tired mentally.
It's not, no, I don't. They got to, if they can sort out their last 20 to 30 minutes of games, this is a team you need to keep your eyes on because you, like you just alluded to, threw away against Philly. Then you go back, good win against Minnesota after Minnesota going undefeated. Draw against DC.
We're
probably
up on Cincinnati.
Yeah,
put,
we're
took
up
Philly
on Cincinnati.
To the brink.
Beat Inter Miami at Inter Miami, which is very difficult to do. The red card game against Philly on March 11th. Let me keep going, okay, you guys?
This is why you can't sleep
on Chicago, the midfield. Midfield trio, I love them. Gutierrez, if I screw these up, just, you know, cut me off. Jimenez and Herbers. I like this midfield trio. Then Kai Kamara, for me, coming to his 10th MLS. He's a guy, whether you like him, you don't like him. He shows up for his club, and I loved, we had him on MLS 360. I said, what are you most looking forward to going to Chicago? He said, winning. I just want to go to a team where we win. He didn't make it about himself. And then Chris Mueller, he is a guy that I would hate to play against because he's that annoying nuisance that always like just changes the momentum of the game, makes something happen. And then he's got that pace and good crossing from wide areas. And they're doing this without Shaqiri. I know Shaqiri hasn't really showed up in Major League Soccer.
He did get back.
He did get back last match. Yep. So I feel like if he can find his form in Major League Soccer, this is a team where don't sleep on them. Don't sleep on them.
If they would just wake up themselves. I completely agree with all those points, but Ezra Henriksen just came out and said it, and I thought you were well done to Doyle for putting that quote into his column. If you're not reading
it was good.
The Armchair Analyst. Yeah,
Ezra wrote my blurb for me.
Yeah, it was
He gives incredible, like, he's so open and so honest about his team in post-game press conferences. I absolutely love it. And the fire blurb was like a list of, first of all, the injuries that they're dealing with, yeah. because Herbers and Jimenez both had to come off yeah. in this one, and they kind of fell apart after that. But also just like what he's thinking tactically and culturally with trying to rebuild this. I will say that I was sitting in the green room on Saturday night watching Andrew Wiebe's soul leave his body because he had written a long thing for the wrap up yes. In about the 70th minute about how good the Fire were.
Yeah,
and
it was
time to stop sleeping
ready.
On the Fire.
I was ready to make Malort references. yeah. I was all in, and then
come on over.
Delete. So, Caleb, Andrew has gotten.
I've been there for a while. I've been there for a while on the Fire, being hopeful for them. I'm taking on the burden that their fans have been carrying.
I just say the mentality's changed. The work ethic has changed.
Kai
as well.
Has given them a focal Life. Point yeah. up top, like a reference point. He's yeah. just gonna do number nine things, and he's gonna be a handful. He engages both center backs basically every time. Mm-hmm. He's a veteran, smart player. He knows which runs to make, and that has made it easier for everyone else. And then you add on Brian Gutierrez's work rate
yeah.
in central midfield coming out as a number 10 who actually stretches the field. It's a different team than what we saw last year.
And that's the challenge now, is that Shaqiri is back. What does Ezra do? How does he make it all work? Because they've been playing better with Brian Gutierrez.
Come on over to the dark side, gentlemen. I know right. you want to.
We got
to
get out of here because blame it on Anders. That's always our mantra here. But we do have a ton of emails from you, Sporting KC fans. We'll tackle those with Kaylin midweek.
Happy Canadian
One of the emails
championship to everyone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kicks well off this week. That's all I was going to say.
Nice. So Joe from Lawrence and Adam from KC.
Good luck, Vaughn.
Whoever it is that emailed, when is it time to let go of PV? We will talk about Kansas City very, very soon. But we'll end with this piece of mail from Renault in Montreal. He said he sent a tweet in late March saying that maybe Peter was past his high point. He says he wants to take a victory lap. He also sent an email saying something was wrong before the season with Montreal, his team. Please find me a new one, says Renault. Then he said that Joaquin Torres wouldn't fit in Philly and he only scored a howler. That's it. I'm only mentioning my good takes, or what we would call doing a Matt Doyle. You ruined it.
Because you were told to wrap 2 minutes
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, I thought we were done. I thought the show was over.
You got Doyle's wrap attention it. Right as we were trying to get a dig on Doyle, and then he didn't even hear it. Anyway, that's the end
Whoa,
of
it. Whoa, Andrew looks so sad.
At all this like progressive build
that.
Up.
You
this is like
that.
When Andrew gets a really good time. Line.
You know how he'll cheer himself up. He'll call the Fire and ask for a free jersey.
Probably. Yeah, yeah. Like
you know what I was going to wear? I have,
Jamie
one.
Chan
I have a
calling
Brian Gutierrez
coming.
Jersey that I begged yeah. and received. So I didn't even have to do that. Anyway, big thank you to Kaylin, to Dave, to Matt. No thank you to Anders, who's been telling us to rap for a while now. But thank you to all of you who hit us up every single week with great questions, great thoughts, great comments, and takes. We're out of here. We will see you on Thursday. Adios.